For April the 24th, 2020, we talk about Valorant, Fallout 76, The Wastelanders, and Animal Crossing New Horizon. Welcome to Level 326. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I didn't think we would be able to pull off a three-style under quarantine, but here we are.
Ooh, it's actually slightly easier than a four-style.
Is it?
In terms of
there's one less style.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, I figured with everybody home. No, I'm low key giving Barry and Jala shit, I guess. Although they both have perfectly valid reasons for not being on.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, I'd say that's all that I had, because
just for anyone who's wondering, we are podcasting about 6 feet away from each other.
I mean, 600 miles away. Mm-hmm. Not even that. Oh, geez. Yeah, no, I had to go with that because there's not an awful lot like in the way of like banter and stuff. I'm running out of like relevant things. I could talk about my meat vacuuming.
Please don't.
No.
I mean, we don't kink shame here.
But no, I bought a vacuum sealer. And I bought it before there was an anticipated meat shortage. I got it basically around the time social distancing started, because if you are spending, you know, if you're not going to the grocery store as much, you want to be able to like basically buy and prepare and seal a bunch of food, mm-hmm. And freeze it without having freezer burns. So like a vacuum sealer is real good. So yeah, I spent today, I think I vacuum sealed about 5 pounds of meat. just various things. So that was
nice.
Fun. Yeah.
Did you just go out and kill one of the local cows, or like how did we procure this meat?
Sam's Club. I mean, nothing special. Yeah.
Gotta hunt it fresh.
Maybe. No, it's like a vacuum sealer is like a hunter thing though, right?
Definitely has a lot of utility if you're bringing in meat that way. That's
yeah, sure. Yeah. The same thing with the chest freezer out in the garage. Not the freezer for chest. What I mean is like the freezer that is configured like a Zelda treasure chest. When you open it up, it goes, "You got the deer." Yeah.
I like that. I'm gonna get that speaker installed.
Yeah. So that's literally all that I have going on. Hey, Dennis, how about you?
Not much. I mean, it's been more fun around the house with kiddos. Milo turns 4 tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nutso. Blink. And I've been playing a lot of No Thank You Evil with them, which is, you know, technically a tabletop game. So I can either stick it in banter or I can stick it in the grind.
Yeah, stick it in banter. I'm curious. So you talked about this. We talked about this. This is the tabletop system specifically for kids that like is weirdly comprehensive in terms of turning childlike ramblings about wouldn't it be cool if into actual mechanics.
Yeah, they've done great with it. And I've gotten to see it in action. Although I will say that the first time we got the box out, and I'm proud of myself for anticipating this, it might as well have been a box of action figures. Like I got it out. I had read the first like adventure and we had made characters. And so I was kind of ready to go if they wanted to actually like play the game.
Right.
But the instant it opened up, there's a deck of cards that represents all the different monsters and like has their image on the front, stats on the back. Luke and Milo dived for that, pulled it out. Okay, we're fighting this one and we're this and we're fighting. And then they started narrating both sides of the battle. everyone was doing 80 million damage and I didn't get a word in edgewise. So that was the first night. They loved it though. It had a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The next day we did just more of like a single combat where I loosely held them to the rules.
Gotcha.
Go for it and just no preceding context. Oh, go ahead.
Was this the mission where they were trying to ice the princess?
Yes. No, that's on Jala's side. You have to ask her about that. But yeah, just, you know, did a single battle, and they kind of, it really works well. They, you know, you have numbers for your stats, but those numbers are also your health. Like, you have no health when you take damage. You just hand in some of your strength or some of your fast some of your smart. And it's just, you know, you get
that's
your numbers.
Disturbingly like real life.
Yeah. yeah. And it is, it's just tokens. So, you know, if you have four tough, you get four tokens. And so when you're out of those, you're out, and you don't have to worry about adding or subtracting. It's just give me two tokens or give me a token. They can also proactively choose to spend them to lower the DC of a roll, which is kind of where a little bit of the thinking comes in. And they took right to that. Like, they get it. They're like, what number do I have to hit? They understand. You know, a five or a six is really hard, and you know, a four or three is reasonable, and spend their tokens accordingly.
See, I feel like that would really lend itself to edible tokens. Like, I don't know, maybe toughness would be like beef jerky.
Yeah. Here's the problem. Which one is sweet? Like, which one is, I guess there is a stat of awesome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be some kind of candy, and we guarantee they would be instantly out of awesome every round.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, so like, you know, that was still just random monsters out of the box and loosely adhering to the rules, but they kind of got the system. And then now we've been just campaigning around. And there's a couple like story threads going on. Some of them are from the book. Some of them are just came up. And I can't remember if I said it on the show last time, but like the guarantee, there's a big map of Storia, which is the land, on the back of the book. And whatever you have planned, they are instantly going to pick the location on the map furthest away from there. That's where they want to go. It's like they've learned, oh, okay, we start the game. I get out of the book. I look at the map and I say, I want to go there. Oh, well, okay, you go there.
You just roll with it.
Let's see. Yeah. But again, just roll with it is the name of the system. Like, it's so good.
I thought it was called No Thank You Evil.
You know, there's some debate there. But they just make it so easy to, and, you know, they're still spouting stuff like, all right, I push a button and I have a flamethrower and I do 80 million damage. And you take that and you parse it and you're just like, okay, it's probably a ranged attack and all attacks deal 2 damage. So yeah, roll that and see what happens. And, you know, they don't care if they do 80 million damage and the bad guy's still standing. They're just having fun. So that's been great. I've been really happy though, that they've understood beyond just, I want to smack bad guys. Like, they've had a lot of fun with the more roleplay elements of it. So, you know, talking to the skeleton guards instead of rolling them over, which I was not prepared for, and I had to invent the skeleton voice.
Hey, Dennis.
Yeah.
What was the skeleton voice?
It was 1930s gangster voice. That man, I don't know.
Gotcha.
With the shaking around a lot.
Right.
But like, you know, crazy stuff that just comes up. Like, they went to a house where the big bad wolf lived with his brothers, the medium bad wolf and the little bad wolf, who were actually very nice. And wound up needing to go up onto their roof to see if something was in their chimney. And so I had him attacked by flying pigs because that felt right. And, you know, Luke had the idea of, I was making him roll a fast to like not stumble on the roof as they were fighting up there, because it's basically dangerous terrain in my mind. And Luke's like, oh, I'll put up a fence around the roof. And he has an ability that he gets to do one heroic thing for free if he spends a certain point. And I was like, yeah, that counts. So, you know, they're thinking about combat in a way that's not just hit thing with weapon, which is fun. But so they, you know, they chased off and I'm improv, by the way, I didn't plan for them to go to this big bad wolf's house. There's like notes in the book that there's, you know, there's actually 3 very friendly wolves inside, but there's not much beyond that. And so I had them chase away they chased away the flying pigs, go back down. And then I'm just improvising the story about the wolf. Actually, you know, they were like, yeah, we were mean to the pigs a while back, and now they're angry and trying to get back at us, but we're trying to find a way to, you know, make it up to them or like make peace with them. But they, you know, and then they go talk to the pigs, and it's like the pigs, actually the house the wolves are in is built on the pigs' old home, and now they're angry. I was like, oh shit, I'm doing the Israel Palestine
stuff. Oh jeez. Like,
whoops. How do I not? Yeah. wolf wolves. And so it's like, it's just been a ton of fun. And I'm, you know, I was worried about whether they would quote unquote get it. And they definitely do. So that has been an absolute blast.
Hey, Greta, what are you doing?
Sorry.
She's just yelling. She's got zoomies. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's so 10 o'clock in our house. It sounds like it might be a little bit earlier in yours. We refer to as kitty wrestling hour.
And gotcha.
When the zoomies set in, like you said.
Mm-hmm. No, she was doing her, like, I'm really worried about something yell. Sorry, I didn't mean to distract. I mean, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been very, most of the time throughout playing, nobody's actually sitting in their chair. Everyone stands up at some point and is running around the room or shouting at each other. Mm-hmm. Or I try to, you know, mix in things like, okay, well, this is a pirate. He only understands people who talk like a pirate and stuff like that.
Are they working together, or do you find them like trying to fight over who controls the story?
Yeah, and Milo is to a fault. Like he's got cleric written all over him in some future incarnation of this. I think there was they were fighting pirates by a swimming pool, and one of the pirates knocked Luke into the pool, and Milo's immediate reaction, he wanted nothing to do, like there was one pirate with one health point left, and he wanted to get Luke out of the pool. And so Milo is very, very cooperative. Although there was one fight, it was like a big bad monster of some sort, and Milo's like, I create a portal and I run and hide in the portal. I was like, okay, you can do that. And he's like, wait, then next turn I come back out of the portal with 5 swords. So, okay, sure. Why not? But yeah, that's been a ton of fun. I can tell they are having so much fun, because like after we put the game away, like, you know, for dinner or for whatever, they're just sitting around and we're discussing what happened at the end. And they've, you know, they want to like keep on role playing it, even though the dice have gone away, which is a lot of fun.
Nice.
So there was a Princess Strike, who is a giant bowling pin with a dress on, essentially. They saved her party, and then we spent like over dinner talking about everything they were doing at the party. Just for fun.
This is like if the Mario crown gets put on a bowling pin.
Yeah. Exactly. And like I said, there's a ton of little kind of story hooks or just interesting ideas in the book. And it gives you plenty of room to just run with it. But there's probably like 3 or so threads that it's like, we sit down and it's like, okay, here's what you've got going on. What do you want to go do? And then they pick some new place we've never been to before. Yeah. It doesn't connect to any of the threads. And we're off.
If Princess Strike gets captured 3 times, it spawns a turkey for dinner. <That's> Yep. Dumb. Real dumb. Oh, man.
Let's port this.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, cool. How about you, David?
Is this the grind?
No, we're just doing the banter.
Okay. Not a whole lot. Been doing a ton of online martial arts classes. Okay. So been doing those with the group I train with back in Cincinnati, and also a guy who trains a related but slightly different style out of the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it, honestly. I got a 10-pound mace to work out with.
Okay.
Steel mace.
Speaking of clerics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right? Exactly. And I figure if the coronavirus decides to take a zombie turn, then I'll be prepared.
Yeah. No, I mean, a mace isn't going to get stuck in a sternum.
Now, remind me, you had a mace before, but there was something wrong with it, so you had to get a new one? Or is this the same mace from before?
So my old one, what I did is I got a kickball, cut a hole in it, filled it up with concrete, and stuck a stick in it.
Ah,
okay.
Which works surprisingly well. But was just slightly too heavy for some of the moves. So that equaled out to about 30, 35 pounds.
Okay.
And this spawns a question that I never thought I would have to ask in my life. What is the plural of mace?
Mice.
Mises.
And what is the collective noun?
A pillage of mace. A window of mace.
That's dumb.
Yep, that's it.
And there we are. Well, that's cool. And you know, like we said, you have a mace around in case you need to cave in any skulls.
Yeah, mm-hmm. as you do.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that sounds like some banter to me. Why don't we have a usual kind of show? We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and we can get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I think that we should get started with David, since you were not here last time.
Yeah, so I've simultaneously got two new ones and no new ones.
Don't understand.
Yeah, so I picked up Dying Light on PC because it's on sale.
Okay.
I've actually played before. I've beaten the base game on PlayStation 4, but they've come out with a enhanced edition, added a whole bunch of I guess whatever you call DLCs that you don't pay for, I guess just updates.
Yeah.
Bunch of DLCs, expansions, that sort of stuff.
No Man's Skies.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, there we go. Yeah, content updates. Playing through it again, overall, I do have to say I am, having a lot more respect for it this time around, like seeing a lot of things I maybe didn't see the first time around, some of those sorts of things. So that's good. It does seem like a lot of the changes they've added are very good. They've a little bit shoehorned some of the games as a service stuff into it.
That's weird.
But I think, at least to me, I would characterize it as being pretty non-hostile, most notably because I don't think any of it you can pay for.
Oh,
so it's like there'll be like random events or like, so like they just got done with the Easter event where you could find eggs that were also hand grenades and like just use them to fight the zombies because why not?
Right.
So that's been a lot of fun. Actually probably the most interesting thing they've added, or at least I didn't play the first time around, is what are called quarantine zones, which these basically, whereas most of the game is fairly open world on one of, there's basically two maps that are both kind of like a city district size.
Okay.
These are instanced individual buildings, and they are designed to be kind of challenges, so they often will either, always have some of the enemies that only normally come out at night, or, will have some sort of unusual mechanic. So, for example, maybe there's one where there's certain enemies that basically the fast zombies, the 28 days later zombies,
right,
normally only spawn if you make loud noise. But in one of the quarantine zones, they basically continuously spawn.
Okay.
And so there are kind of these like challenge modes, which is kind of neat on its own. But what's really interesting is they've really worked to kind of make them sort of miniature, like survival horror light type of things.
Okay. I was going to ask if they play like a puzzle or if it's just like an especially intense session.
Yeah. So I would say there's nothing I would say that is explicitly puzzle in terms of like a, oh man, I'm going to have to, think this through type of thing. but there are definitely things where it's like, you know, one of the levels you initially, it doesn't seem like you can get to most of the supply drops at the objective for the level.
Okay.
And you eventually, in the course of trying to get to the one supply drop, you can get to basically like climb on top of one of the elevators that's not like lined up in its shaft, you know, with the doorway. And basically the elevator like falls, and that's what then makes it so that now you have access to the fourth shaft, so you can get to all the floors to get what you need.
So
I would say not necessarily explicitly puzzles, but there are kind of more sophistication to it.
Yeah.
There's also a number of areas where one of the levels is like a restaurant, and there's sections where, like, say you can look in on the kitchen, and there's basically like a whole bunch of enemies in there, like, you know, eating some corpses, that type of thing. And you can't actually get to them. They're just there for kind of atmosphere.
Flavor.
Yeah, exactly.
Specifically, human flavor.
Yeah, you know, the long pork flavor. And, you know, there's scripted events. So, you know, things where it's like, oh, you need to walk down this hallway in order to get the supply drop. But then when you walk back out, the steam pipe will burst right next to you and do kind of a jump scare.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's just kind of fun. It's nice to see them take what's, to a significant degree, kind of a stupid game and make it a little bit more intelligent.
Yeah, or at least giving it a little bit more of a, making it not so much of a straight shot.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Probably the biggest thing I'd say that is still a downside is the difficulty features are very unfortunate in that, I'm definitely to the point where I would like to play it as on a higher difficulty. But the problem is that innately, if you increase the difficulty, it takes away a lot of the quality of life features.
Mm.
Oh, like what?
So, for example, you can normally, like when you walk into a room, you can activate like your survivor sense, which does, you know, kind of a...
It's like a detective vision kind of thing?
Yeah, and it basically marks everything you can loot. It's okay. A thing where, like, I really don't care enough to, like, search through and find all the things I can loot on my own. Like,
stuff blends in.
Right, exactly. So, similarly, and kind of weird, you actually get, well, you can get higher level loot overall on the higher difficulties. However, in general, the loot you get will actually be worse than the lower difficulties.
Okay.
Huh.
So you basically are less likely to get a rare item. However, if you do, it's likely to be a better rare item. But still, weird. That means that, like, most of the time, it just kind of, your loot drops suck.
Mm. Do they figure people playing at this level have, you know, gotten as good a loot as they need at less than rare? They're kitted out unless it's super special, so only worry about the super special stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe, because that's the other thing, is just the enemies become incredibly damage spongy. And this is a game where I guess a lot of the enemies are set up in terms of, like, you have to take care of them very quickly or they can punish you.
Mm-hmm.
And that those are kind of at loggerheads with each other.
Okay.
Yeah. It what you're describing feels like the devs kind of misunderstand the core fantasy of their own game. Like, you know, the gritty survival, have to seek out loot in every corner, doesn't really make sense, especially if you're in a game where they're referring to it as loot. That's your clue that people aren't looking for gritty survival.
Well, and I think the thing that's tough is, what is great about these series of games is these are probably the best games in terms of like being zombie games where the zombies are actually a legitimate threat.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So like the real difficulty increase is a good thing. You know, the fact that you have to be much more careful not to get like surrounded or snuck up on or things like that is great.
Okay.
It's just all of the kind of fake difficulty that they add.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So yeah. Other than that, the storyline continues to be ridiculous. You know, early on,
you hated the story when you played it the first time.
Yeah, I mean, your character has a major, major case of just like arbitrary asshole syndrome.
I mean, and this is also the same team that did the Dead Island games, so it is right. It is of a pedigree.
Yeah, exactly. It does seem like they've learned at least some. So I mean, there is that. But yeah, I mean, your character, the main villains of this are just cartoonishly evil. Like, you very much realize why Umbrella is kind of a faceless corporation, as opposed to a character. And that's right. Because if it was a character, it would be just like twirling its mustache and tying the old ladies to train tracks.
Yeah. Although every Umbrella executive that you meet basically does exactly that.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's some definitely some, issues with that here. So. Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
So, yeah. So that's that. The other thing that I actually only started playing today, so I can't give a ton of insight into, but the Fallout 76 has maybe had their No Man's Sky moment.
Yeah, I saw. I was just like looking at stuff. I just had an unrelated site open, and I saw a banner ad for their new. What is the Wastelanders DLC?
And have the thing we should have had from the start.
That's basically the joke I'm going to make. Is like it just said like there are NPCs now, mm-hmm. which is like the fact that they had to put that on an ad is hilarious to me. Yeah. So how is it?
So from what I can see, and some of this is, you know, I guess what I've actually seen, some of it is kind of, you know, what I've picked up from the forums. Cause like I said, I haven't had a lot of time to play a ton.
Uh-huh.
It seems like overall they've made good, you know, it seems like the community is really excited, really happy with what they've done. You know, what I've seen so far has been really good. I do think, you know, assuming this is able to, you know, be a success and, you know, have a, you know, future of, you know, multiple updates, you know, that sort of thing, the way No Man's Sky has, I think it's going to be a thing where for a little while, it's going to be kind of rocky, because right now they do have very good, you know, NPCs and dialogue and options and that sort of thing, but still the main, you know, there's a whole bunch of main quest lines sitting around that are just kind of the other, you know, the original way,
like the legacy stuff. Like right. getting the like activities and flavor text from those terminals.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't need to just add NPCs. They needed to take out the fact that there weren't.
Right. And that's the thing is, it looks like they are not going to not have no plans, it seems, to just like kind of retcon things. You know, kind of the plot line of the original game, in very vague, so it's not too spoiler, is basically a zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
So
just the first ghoulification happens.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess particularly there's basically transmissible ghoulism, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Isn't that not how ghouls are created, though?
They're not exactly ghouls, but they kind of are.
Got it.
But so kind of the plot line is the original game is basically your actions are kind of why are presented as being why the rest of the Fallout games aren't about zombie apocalypse.
Because you deal with that initial outbreak.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so now the idea is, all right, now that's why there weren't any NPCs there, because everyone that was there, you know, got killed. But now that the zombies are gone, the, you know, people are coming back.
Right, right.
Which is, I mean, reasonable. You know, mm-hmm. wouldn't necessarily be my first choice, but, you know.
Your first choice reasonable. For the story to tell, or?
Well, just like, there are a lot of legitimately good stories in the base mm-hmm. game. It's just having them all be told after the fact is just not a compelling way to tell a story. Yeah. And so I would have preferred if they had went back and told some of those stories kind of the right way.
Right, right. It's like, hey, this is what really happened.
Right, because they get into... you know, they get into a lot more the some of the kind of labor relations aspects of the pre-war world.
Okay.
And you know, get into a lot more explicitly people actually trying to rebuild the world, those sorts of things. So there's a lot of elements that haven't really been explored in other games, but you know,
yeah. Well, the idea of labor unions having a place in West Virginia actually tracks and makes historical sense too.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that actually sounds badass to me.
Yeah. The other thing that's really interesting is kind of this setting's equivalent of like the Minutemen or. I guess you could maybe say like the Brotherhood of Steel when they're in the games, when they're being good guys,
right.
You know, kind of this games in effect, like special forces are basically like the smoke jumpers, the kind of the spiritual descendants of the people that were in charge of managing like mine fires.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is a really neat story beat. It's also cool because from like aesthetic standpoint, like all of their outfits and armor is all like Mad Max sized firefighter gear.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So like there's a lot of really cool things they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully, they'll find some way to revive, some of that.
Yeah.
They also have added, two allies / romantic options, one male, one female.
Okay.
I've actually only met the female ally so far, and she's basically a astronaut that crashes down.
Okay. Does she crash down after the bombs drop?
Yes.
Okay, so she wasn't in a vault.
No.
Nice.
So basically doing the Fallout 4 like cryosleep thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of a interesting story beat, and so I'm, you know, trying to help her figure out if any of her crewmates survived, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool.
The other thing I'm kind of excited for, and that depending on how it goes, might make me go with the faction I wasn't expecting to go with, because you basically choose to ally with either the Raiders or the Settlers. Mm-hmm. And okay. I'm very much going the good aligned path when I play these sorts of games.
Right.
Except that your liaison for the Raiders is by far my favorite character from the base game, who is Rose, who is basically a Raider, like whatever the female version of Mr. Handy is.
Oh,
how do you mean?
A housekeeping robot kind of thing.
Right. So she's basically a housekeeping robot that has like...
We call her a Rosie.
Like, yes, Rosie. Yes.
Huh. Is it literally Rosie? I was just naming the robot made from the Jetsons.
I didn't make the connection, but I think that actually is her name.
Okay.
But she's basically, one of these robots, except with like... like knives and like pieces of rebar and stuff welded to her, and somehow she's uses tons of drugs despite being a robot, so I don't know how that works. But she's just a hilarious character. She basically, her mission in the base game is her sending you around to like learn all of the bandit camps that have all since been wiped out, but to learn kind of their secrets of what was their kind of tactics.
Okay.
And so this ranges from one of the bandit camps is basically a group of cannibals, and she tries to convince you to eat someone. Oh, and no. you either can or can't. One specializes in explosives, so you have to blow something up. Probably the strangest is there's one bandits that basically weren't that good at a fight, but were incredibly good at like diplomacy and politics and kind of those sorts of things.
Okay. Not a bandit.
So she sends you off to make friends with a death claw.
Okay.
So they're just weird, missions of, they're very much something you'd expect from like a Borderlands type of game.
Yeah.
So if they continue on with this, I might be tempted to go with the bandit faction on this.
Nice. Well, you can always roll up a new character and do the other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's about it for me. Do you have any questions?
No, it's cool that they added this content and it seems worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a positive that games can be added to.
I like that you kind of mentioned earlier, it's a lot of games as a service stuff without necessarily trying to turn it into a paid service, which I would say is like the idea of a living game coming to life.
Yeah, definitely. And it does, it is nice that, at least as much as I tend to be like the pessimist on games, it is nice that game companies have apparently realized, if we just screw up a launch, we can like stay with the game and actually make it good, and then people will, forgive us.
Right.
The only thing people love more than hating someone is a good forgiveness story or a good turnaround story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And is that all you had, David?
That's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I got into the Valorant beta, which I talked about a couple weeks ago.
I've seen you playing this on Discord, yeah.
And I remember when I gave the story about how they were giving out the beta keys, I was like, this is a really interesting creative idea. Like, let's see how it goes. I can confirm it's shitty. It sucks. It was a bad idea. No one doing betas do this.
What did you?
Yeah. So to recap, they said hey, you get the beta code by watching people play the beta. And basically there were certain, you know, streamers with drops enabled, where by watching them play, you would get, the drop sent to your account, and like that would unlock the game for you, versus the typical, like, you know, send in your email and we'll email you back if you got in kind of setup.
Right.
And you know, I don't know what I expected, but of course the worst possible incarnation of this is what was true, which is just like holding viewership hostage. Ooh. To boost numbers. And the thing I don't get is, like, you know, if you do a sweepstakes, you have to list very clearly the odds of winning, and, you know, it'd be very specific about what you get for the time or entries that you put in. This, they just said, hey, you know, the longer you watch, the higher your chance of getting in is. So naturally, everyone lost their minds and just left it up all the time, because we're talking to gamers who are going to min-max.
Yeah, no, they degenerate play. Doing. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, then they come out with this, you know, update saying, like, hey, you know, if you've been watching for a while, take a break. You can get the drop even if it's not on. Like, your chance of winning goes up most significantly in the first 2 hours that you watch. And then after that, it only goes up slightly. And I was like, that is not going to mean anything to people who care. Everyone is going to hear that and think, okay, you know, how big is that chance? Is it an extra 1% an hour I've watched? Is it an extra 3% an hour I've watched? Like, the fact that it does continue increasing on any scale with the amount of time you watch means everyone is just going to keep it up.
Yeah.
So they can have their cake and eat it too, of like, oh, well, we told you to take a break, you psycho. But really, if you want in, you should keep watching.
I mean, I would be real mad if I was an advertiser, because if you have a bunch of people idling, yeah, and you're paying the, you are paying the streamer and Twitch for a bunch of ad views that, nobody is sitting there for.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, and not that I have a lot of sympathy for advertisers, but just like there's all kinds of just bad unintended things that could happen on this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's fine for me to talk about. So my wife, Jen, does some advertising stuff of this ilk for, she's literally, you know, done talks with Twitch or what have you.
Right.
And she's like, she's in charge of making sure that, you know, basically ads are effective. So she was like, you're trying to get into what, how?
Mm-hmm.
And you're leaving the screen, you've left the screen up for how long? Interesting. So I may have inadvertently caused some uncomfortable conversations at Twitch.
Yeah.
Oh, so shitty. And like, even when you get in, you can't, like, what can you tell your friends except for like, hey, sorry, keep watching, haha. So, you know, I had a friend that wanted to play as well. He just actually tonight sent me a little thing. It was like, hey, I got in finally. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, you know, great. But it, you know, you have no control over that. And there's people that have been watching for hours upon hours upon hours that just
hoping to get the golden ticket.
Exactly. And then it's sunk cost fallacy. And there's no way that there's no interaction with this except for, oh, I lucked into it, wow, in the first hour of streaming. That is not a negative interaction. So just dumb on their part. Like, why do it that way? There's a game behind it all, so I can talk about that. But go ahead, David.
I'd be interested to know, is this a real beta?
Yes, it is. It is a closed beta. They are very much still working on the game. I don't know a ton of specifics, except they're, you know, they've been putting out videos about what they're updating. It's closed, so, you know, obviously there's not, it's not just like, hey, everyone come in and we'll call this a beta.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the timeline is for them to go to open beta. I think there's a good amount of development left. And especially, I think I talked about, last time, maybe in conjunction with the story, that some of the effects of different abilities that your characters have look really rough, and I hope they would get a layer of polish. It's hard to tell what is, hey, we want to make this run on any computer, and what is placeholder.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that is, you know, whatever, 10 minutes ranting about how bad the setup for the Valorant closed beta is. But I can talk about the game on the other side, which is actually pretty good. Not good enough to warrant a crappy beta structure, but it is actually really good.
Okay.
So anyone who's played Counter-Strike will be instantly at home. Like, this is a pretty bald-faced ripoff of Counter-Strike. Riot has done. Yeah. in terms of, you know, you've got bomb maps where one team starts trying to get a bomb to one of a couple of points. The other team is defending. At the beginning of each round, you buy weapons, and, you know, how much you can buy depends on how well you did in preceding rounds, how much cash you earned.
Wow.
Yeah, so the format is extremely familiar. At the same time, you know, there's a reason Counter-Strike has been going strong for so long. It's that it's a really interesting competitive formula that works.
Yeah, that's definitely the reason, not EPing.
Well, so the twist that they put on it then is that characters all have abilities, Overwatch style. And so it's kind of your teams are made up of characters, and characters have different roles in terms of, you know, they could be a duelist, they could be an initiator, they could be like control, and the abilities will do things like smoke off areas of the map, which was essentially the one verb in Counter-Strike, or, you know, have flashbangs that go around corners, or, you know, try to highlight enemies through walls. The theme throughout the abilities, except in a few very narrow exceptions, is that the abilities are meant to give information and initiate conflicts rather than actually be something used during the gunplay itself. So you're not going to get out and throw a grenade in the middle of a gunfight, or you're not going to, you know, once shots start being fired, it is about the technical gunplay, which for a game that is overtly trying to be competitive focused, hey, that makes sense. I respect that. But the different characters and different abilities do give that sense of depth and variance within a single game, that just makes it feel so much more different, and have so much more nuance than the base Counter-Strike. Let's see here. I've been playing a character that has a bow that can shoot arrows that bounce off walls, and you can use those to deal minor damage or to like reveal an area, highlight players. I've been playing a character, and this is like I said, most abilities aren't damage dealing. I've also been playing a character called Raze, which I think people are pretty mad about because she is the one character that actually has most of her abilities deal damage, as in her ultimate is a rocket launcher. So people get very salty because whereas, you know, other players or other characters, when you're playing them well or when you're using their abilities, it's kind of, you know, controlling the flow of combat or shaping initiation of fights. With Raze's abilities, you use them and people die. Which gives people something very direct and concrete to be salty about.
Nice.
So is this the normal, like, competitive multiplayer, like, that's fun, therefore it must be removed, or?
That's a good question. And it's so, like you said, to your question about it being a true beta, I'm not sure how much of it is that kind of raging versus how much of it is people just haven't figured her out yet. And so, you know, it is a little bit of, you know, she literally has a noob tube. So it's oriented towards being able to just pick up and you know, wreak some havoc and get some kills. As people get used to the characters and as a meta forms, particularly in terms of teams using their abilities together, I think that will change. Right now, the big, you know, whereas Overwatch, anything approaching competitive is all about using your abilities in tandem together in an effective way. I haven't seen that evolve yet in Valorant, where it's just, you know, you kind of do what you can with your abilities and you don't really think about how to use your alts together or what have you. As people figure out the game and the characters more, I think there will be a lot more of that. Hey, you use your ability that reveals people through walls, then I'll use my ability that can shoot people through walls. Or you seal off this area so they have to come forward, and then I'll use my ability that traps them, you know, in that area they had to come into. That's going to require coordination. So I think, like, it will be earned when you do that, and that might make the characters shine more and might make Raze feel a little less relevant. I don't know. But we'll see.
Huh.
Yeah. It is Counter-Strike-y in terms of, you know, if you get headshotted, you die real quick. And there will be plenty of rounds where you get popped out of nowhere, just an unfortunate angle, or someone got a successful flank off, and you're watching the match until the next round.
Do they do anything to
such a strong case for this?
Do they do anything to make the spectator experience less hateful than it is in Counter-Strike?
I can't really speak to how it is in Counter-Strike. You're watching through someone's eyes.
Okay.
You can rotate through the players that you're watching through their eyes.
Yeah, that sounds specifically like Counter-Strike.
Yeah, and you can still chat with them. And I will say I've been very pleased with the number of people using microphones in the game.
Okay.
Like generally, first off, there's the built-in character barks in reaction to, you know, seeing an enemy or having someone die or what have you. Those are pretty good at simulating the team communication that you need for a game like this. So the base level is well polished. Like I think they've done that really well.
So when you say simulating, you mean they drop the N word a lot?
Yeah. Insult your mother. And it's the useful chatter.
Okay.
Yeah. So not the hardcore experience, but the experience that actually makes you feel like you're playing with a team. That's done well, but then even on top of that, there's been a really good number of people, that are using mics and at least trying to communicate tactically. So like, you know, I'm not seeing anyone at A, it's clear. So let's go B, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun. It's still very much, I think it's a game that is being figured out by me and it feels like by the community and by the developers. Hey, cool. It's a closed beta. But it's been a lot of fun to play. And if you like Counter-Strike or have fond memories of Counter-Strike, I think it makes this worth a try. Again, the one thing I feel bad about is I can't recommend that, without knowing I'm asking you to watch 80 hours on Twitch, or at least have a window open for 80 hours.
Like maybe wait for them to develop a reasonable.
Yeah. Open beta will be awesome. And I hope to see lots of you there.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's the big new thing I've been playing. More SteamWorld Quest, Hand of Gilgamesh, playing with the kids. I don't think I mentioned last time, but the missions are broken into chapters of a storybook. And so it just fits really, really well as, like, you know, it's 30-minute bites. You play an area, beat a boss, and it's just a real convenient place to be like, okay, now we're done.
Yeah. And 30 minutes sounds like about the attention span of a kid watching something.
Well, you would think no. My kids at least could stare at a screen for days and days.
Gotcha.
And be perfectly fine. In fact, I've caught Luke on occasion staring at like just the blue blank screen.
Ooh,
of the TV.
That's discomforting.
It's like there's nothing that's gonna happen there, buddy. Like, you know. Actually having those chapter breaks as a clear signal of this is done, is more helpful than other games I've played with them, where it's just kind of like every time you pause and say we're done, they're like, oh, why? You know, there was something else in front of us to do. Nothing really new to say there, apart from that. And I guess the final thing is I've talked about the cycle a lot. I got involved on a whim in the professional, quote unquote, professional cycle league. So it's called the Prospectors, which is a play on prospectors, which is what they call your characters. But they were short on teams, needed people to join last minute, and me and some other randos formed a team 2 hours before the start of the season. And we're in there mixing it up with all the people that are like the official teams. And it's been a ton of fun. I will say overall we've done. I'm proud of how we've done. We're not near the top by any means, but I think we're one slot away of potentially having an invite to the Invitational, which it's like, you know, if there's 10 teams total and the top five go to the Invitational or whatever, we're in sixth.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I don't think we'll actually sustain that level of play. But it has been really fun. I've kind of gotten to a point in that game where I'm not going to say easily win, but if I'm focusing and trying hard in solos, you can pub stomp, right? You can go into a lobby of a bunch of people that don't know the game as well and win pretty easily or do well for yourself.
Yeah.
The team of people that I'm with, certainly if we're playing together in squads, it's that way. Like I think it's people that have the game figured out pretty well. When you're playing in the league, it is completely different picture, and we are low mid on the totem pole again for sure. And so it's a completely different experience where you know you're just happy to survive, you're happy to score well. But we've actually done pretty well for ourselves. The fun experience that I'll talk about was there was one game where early on we encountered the team is called Genesis, and they are far and away the best players in the game. And we realized we, at least at the moment, had better weapons than they did. So we had focused on money. They had focused on contract points. We kind of got the drop on them, chased them, killed two of them, which if you remember in the cycle, you get one respawn. So they kind of warped away and chased the other two off this big objective. We're like, yeah, all right, we did it. Perfect. Oh.
Yeah, and then they rallied.
My guy, and we were dead.
once they learned your play.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where for 5 minutes, we had control of the major objective, and we were like, yeah, we did it. And then we saw them on the horizon, and the right play would have been to say, oh, bye, time to leave this objective. our mentor was like, all right, we stomped them once, we're going to stomp them again. Oh, wait, no, we're all dead. We're all dead.
No, what you need to do, if any sports movie I've ever seen about a ragtag group of misfits,
right,
is true, you need to come up with some kind of play that you can run that is just barely not illegal within the game, but is so crazy that it just might work, and then you're going to win against the snobby kids from the camp across the lake.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
Yeah.
I'll get back to you on exactly what that is, but I think you can probably brainstorm names for it without needing to know exactly.
No, I've contributed enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with like the San Antonio Drop or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What was it in Little Giants? I forget. The Annexation. The Annexation.
Yep. And the kid could only catch when it was a roll of toilet paper. And Rick Moranis hands the football to a kid and says, hey, okay, go put this in the bathroom. Like, the kids are going to wipe their ass with the football. Oh, man, the Annexation of Puerto Rico. Yeah, that's a good movie.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah, so it's fun being in a competitive league. It is definitely a scene that is, like, small enough that you know, we can play and have fun and be competitive.
Nice.
And it's been a good time.
Very good.
Yeah, so that's me.
Awesome.
And if anyone listening is already in Valorant, then hit me up for sure.
Yeah. Be fun to have people you know to be on a team with that you can actually coordinate with, which would be nice.
Yeah, and I'll feel less guilty if someone is already in versus if I'm asking them to go through the dross of the
Yeah, no. Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine. Good.
I was going to say, what about you? But
I've mostly been busy. I beat the Surge, but that's for a Bonfire Side Chat. Mm-hmm. The other things I've been playing, I don't have too much to say about. Like, I didn't continue doing Half-Life because of, you know, being busy. But I streamed the remake of Onimusha over the weekend, and I picked up playing the new Animal Crossing, basically out of ambient peer pressure. and also because it seemed like it would be fun to have a game to play for a half hour a day for about 2 weeks and then put down.
So this is my shame. I literally have no idea what you do in Animal Crossing. So I would love an education.
Chores.
You do chores and stuff. It's, I mean, okay. So I've never gotten too terribly far in one, but like the appeal that I can see and the appeal that I've seen expressed is that it is just a very simple life and living simulator that at least before this entry was not really something that you could break by making it into something about making a bunch of money within the game. Like it was
an optimization simulator.
So like, you know, like there's a way you can play like Stardew Valley where you're just kind of like puttering around town and maybe you have a little plot where you plant some stuff and just kind of go and talk to people. But also you can play Stardew Valley like I do, where you like optimize every single square. And this one, like high level play, has you like basically doing arbitrage with crops. Okay. Going to different islands and finding like places where different things sell for more money. But like at the base level though, in this one, you go to a little island and you have a tent. There's some other people there. And like every day you can, you know, turn it on and you have like little tasks you can go do to like make money to buy and collect furniture for your house that you're upgrading. So like different fruit trees grow on the island, and you go and you shake them, and then you pick up the fruit that comes that comes from it. You go and like you pick weeds so the town doesn't get overgrown, so new people will move in. You can I've got weeds to pick at home. You can like fish and collect bugs and dig up fossils to like take to a museum to fill out the collection. It's all
expressly designed to be tinkered with rather than kind of mainline.
Yeah. And like the thing that is appealing to me about it is like, oh, I can just like fire this up and see if any of the dipshits that live on my island have anything fun to say. And I can see if there's something cool in the store that would be fun to decorate my house with. And I can go and do a little bit of just like chores. I can see if any new fish have spawned in the river and stuff and put it down. And I'm still very early on. Like, this is kind of more aggressively tutorialized than the previous Animal Crossing games that I've played. Just in terms of, you know, you show up and then there's like, before you can really do anything, you have to basically earn miles, which is just like little fake currency before you really start focusing on real currency. And it's like, you know, it gives you little basically achievements. So like, go pick this many weeds, you know, turn in this many like wildlife. And it's just a way to like point you in the direction of the things that you can do around the island. And as you pass like different gates, like new stuff moves into the island, and eventually it gets down to like and I haven't gotten to this point, but like picking what stores go where, and you know, moving people's houses around, and people have like themes that they develop for their island and stuff like that.
Nice. And when does Doom Guy show up?
Only on that one day when they both released at the same time. Yeah. No, but
I don't think I've seen a single piece of fan art for either game that doesn't include the other.
Yep, it's fun. It's cute, and I like that quite a bit. Isabelle has not moved to my island yet, but I am led to believe that she will. I don't have
fighting with Doom Guy. Right?
Yeah. Once they beat back the forces of hell, then they will. Then they'll be good.
We'll pick some weeds.
Yeah. So, you know, I have no illusions that I'm going to stick with this the entire time. Like, really, I just wanted something very low stakes to like just check in on again, literally for about a half hour every day.
This is a digital bonsai tree.
A little bit, yeah. And also the fact that it does have a little bit more of a progression structure. Like, you can get recipes to build more durable tools. You know, the fact that like you go from a tent to having a nicer house and stuff like that, and it ultimately gets down to like designing the island and like putting, you know, shops in better places and trying to like maximize its rating and stuff. Like, the fact that it does kind of end up being a little bit more management-y is good, and is good and appealing to me, but I just don't know if I'm going to get there, because like both of the Animal Crossing games that I played before, Wild World and New Leaf, you know, the DS and 3DS one respectively, I played it for a month and then put it down for enough days where I felt like, no, I can't go back. The island's going to be a mess.
They'll yell at me. I like the idea that like, as you come to understand the systems well enough to have an opinion on them, you're given control of them.
Yes.
And it's a really elegant kind of upswing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like cool stuff. Like there are areas of the island that you can't like get to right away. Like, you know, you have to be able to craft a little pole to like launch over little rivers. And there's like areas of the island that are on plateaus that have like flowers and stuff that I'd like to pick so I can go plant them, you know?
I just like the idea of like, to hell with bridges. We're going full pole.
Well, you can build a bridge. you can invest the money to build a bridge. But like right now, before you do that, if you just want to go over there and like get all of the weeds under control and add that to your little like fossil and seashell patrol, then you can do it. So
then you go full pole vault.
Yeah. Yeah. So, any other questions about Animal Crossing, understanding that I've only played like a couple of hours of it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And I don't have anything to say about Onimusha right now. I'll save that for next time.
Is that the one that is would be a fairly realistic, samurai simulator, except demons.
Not necessarily. It wouldn't be very, very realistic. It was a launch era game for the PlayStation 2, originally designed as like a medieval Japan Resident Evil. When another team that was working on another game that was going to be a Resident Evil game saw a glitch where some enemies were juggled up into the air, they thought, oh, I can make Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
But no, I'll finish that on stream this next time, and I will talk about it if it feels worth talking about.
Nice. Sweet.
Yeah, and that's me.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, so I asked them, I had arcades on the brain for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I put you guys in control. You get to decide the theme of the next major arcade installation game. What is the topic that you pick to give a giant elaborate cabinet setup to?
Yeah. And for an example, like you posted the image of one of those like skiing games where you have the two poles like on the left and right.
Yeah. And those are pretty gentle in terms of the elaborateness that you can find in arcades, but I thought they illustrated the point well.
Yeah. No, but I think that explains what an installation game is pretty well. Mm-hmm. Going to throw in here with begin with OMG Amoose, who says full Mech Warrior setup with joystick, throttle, pedals, and a console of buttons a la the Steel Battalion controller. Mm-hmm. Also, the unit has three monitors that are synced to turn with the seat as you rotate the torso, as well as vibration functions when hit. Game includes a full mercenary company simulation. What? You want to know why? Because then I could buy a unit and never buy another game or leave my house. It should only cost about 45 to 70K, so maybe I'll charge visitors 50 cents to play when I need to sleep. 50 cents? What is this, 1995? Come on, man.
Yeah, Twitch plays Mech Warrior is what you're
going to
set up.
I'm just imagining, like, the setup just having built-in heaters that turn on as your mech starts to overheat.
Oh, that's a fun idea.
I think that'd be a fire hazard.
Guys, three
so
words.
So is an overheating mech. Also, three you words. Have to have the little flip-up cover over your eject button.
Oh, yes, just like Steel Battalion. And also the eject button would shoot you out of the building.
Yep, my three words were going to be functional ejector seat.
Oh, man. David, what does Casey say?
He says, 2018 Spider-Man. I want wearable gauntlets to let me swing through the city and web people. Also, maybe some wall climbing. Basically, it's going to be the best upper body aerobics machine ever.
I think you mean the best shoulder dislocator ever.
But I mean, like, if you're just going to be aiming at it, I don't think you're going to be swinging around the city, actually.
That's fair.
So I
that's,
feel
that's
like
not
you could make that. Something like this work with, you ever see, like, how they do, like, the Matrix and, like, Wushu movies and stuff like that? You know, where they're...
Oh, yeah, like the rotating camera rig?
Yeah, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do a Spider-Man game, but it's only the various parts in Spider-Man where you have to hold two sides of a web together to stop something.
You've
latched on and like you are the bracing thing, stopping the thing from going off. And it's like, you know, the Zoltan games or whatever, where you like try to hold on for as long as you can or hit the hammer as hard as you can. It's just you hang on to the webs as long as you can before it pops you off.
the final boss is when he has to stop the train in Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Phil say?
Yeah, so Phil says VR space combat sim with full 6 degrees of freedom where the cockpit rotates in every direction. And then he amends, wait, no, straight dog fighting in the atmosphere. That way gravity is affected.
Yeah.
A factor.
I mean, if you don't have people turning upside down, I think you're going to lessen the vomit payload. Mm-hmm.
It's and who's going to want to play a game where they might or they won't, they might not vomit.
I forget the name of this. There was a game like this at the one of the local arcades here, Laser Arcade in the Kingsgate Mall,
I remember that.
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't think it was Afterburner, but like you definitely sat in a cockpit, and it didn't do like full rotation, but it did tilt.
Mm-hmm.
I miss Laser Arcade.
I totally remember that. That was awesome.
It's a Kroger now. It depresses
that
me.
That is major
downgrade.
But yeah, that would. I'm surprised. Actually, both the Mech Warrior and like the dogfighting. I'm surprised. Dogfighting meaning in planes, not with actual canines. I'm surprised those don't have like a rig sim subculture or whatever.
No. VR is kind of stepping up. No Man's Sky VR and then like Everspace VR, like those are a thing. I forget if Elite Dangerous has a VR mode or not, but
it does. Not Spider-Man on PS4
VR is the thing.
Yeah,
Spider-Man does have a VR game. I tried it. It was crap.
Oh man. Let's see here. This will be me. We have Alexander who says, as the one mutant who loved Skyward Sword, I would love an arcade game using those controls with the more sophisticated motion sensors buried in an attractive looking toy sword and shield set. Bonus points if the place in the machine the sword hangs out in locks when not in use, so you can only pull the sword from the stone if you've paid your quarters to make you worthy. I like that.
Yeah, that's a fun idea.
It plays a little fanfare. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lights go down and then you can start.
Mm-hmm.
And this just to make it super, free to play scummy, you pay for the chance to pull the sword from the stone.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to try a certain number of times before it actually comes out.
Mm-hmm. It measures how sweaty your palm is to see how nervous you are about pulling it out. Yeah. David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, this answer is for my WWE-obsessed daughter. Imagine a ring. Two people would get in and put on sensors. Not a gross, sweaty suit, just sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And could pick your wrestler and play as them. Now, the way the people won't get hurt is by standing in their side of the ring, so no physical contact. You could do Mortal Kombat-style combinations to pull off their special moves. I can't imagine spending paychecks just watching my youngest girl play this.
This gets back to the social distancing choke slam that I posted a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
And
no,
I feel like
no contact KOs. Yeah.
I feel like if you're going to do this, you need to integrate Twitch streaming into it so that people can rate your like monologues and quips and taglines.
Yeah. No, just get up there and do your promos, and then people can give thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta get that heat.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Warren say?
Warren says, Star Wars Rogue Squadron, a full-size cockpit with screens where the windows would be and hydraulics to move and shake it when turning and getting shot. I love this idea. He also says, the pod racing arcade game was incredible, and this has the potential to be even better.
I agree.
Pod racing arcade game is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. No, and Rogue Squadron, man, it's been forever since I thought about Rogue Squadron. They sell Rogue Squadron on GOG now. Like, you can just get it. You can buy it and play it. It's been forever.
Man, that's I remember the days where it was at my library. They had a copy, but it was always out. And so every time we went to the library, I'd check for it. But yeah, the world has changed a lot since then.
Yeah. Finishing out here with Greg, who says, a multiplayer tank sim where one person is the driver and the other is the gunner. This setup has been used in the past for some games. Atari did a firefighting game based on this formula in the 80s. But with today's tech, this would be a blast. Bonus point if they can pull off some quote realistic damage effects like harder to drive or shoot, darkened lights, etc. Yeah,
this is cool. I think of there was one game at a local movie theater where you played like a turret gunner. So you're always in a stationary thing, but you would pull basically the shell over your head and then rotate it in 360 degrees. And it would look like you were in whatever turret.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one part of it. And then driving is pretty well figured out in arcades. Yeah. So it's working.
So the sky's the limit for mine. I want the FTL arcade experience.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, where you are in a ship. The ship is, you know, a few different rooms. And you've got a commander who can see everything and is giving orders over headsets to the different people to go and keep the systems online, and also do like little shooting for the borders and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun. It'd be like a combination arcade game escape room kind of thing.
And you have to wear a harness so that if your hull gets breached, you can get sucked out into space.
Yes. Or the harness would just tighten, so it'd make it harder and harder for you to breathe. Yeah, you have to sign a lot of waivers.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
All right, so I think I'd go with the like six-axis simulator thing, except I want the game to be like a 3D version of Luftrauser or Love Trousers or whatever it's called.
The indie 2D dogfighting game. Yeah.
Right, where you basically, like, the whole mechanic is you pretty much can't turn while accelerating, but then when you cut the engines, you kind of float and can maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, basically free fall simulator the game.
God. Again, you would have to have just basically make the entire thing coated with some kind of Scott guard so the vomit would just flow off of it.
Mm-hmm. You can buy it and play. It's disposable, the entire machine.
Yes. Yeah, it's a single use. And then Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I will say, Greg, this wasn't my answer, but Greg made me think, with how much I've enjoyed VR fitness stuff,
mm-hmm.
The idea of like a tank sim like that, only oriented towards fitness. So mm-hmm. turning the turret actually, you know, takes pulling, or like mm-hmm. loading the shells or like medicine balls or something like that. Yeah. I could see being cool.
Do it like a couple of steps below steampunk, like a tree punk, like you're a bunch of Ewoks trying to man a log and rope. Siege engine of some kind.
Pull back the slingshot launcher.
Yeah.
So that would be fun. But the one that I actually had in mind was some kind of construction game. Like, I want the cabin that you can go into and be suddenly in a giant backhoe or a bulldozer or stuff like that and rumble around in those. I think that would be a lot of fun. I know there's like attractions in Vegas where you can pay to like play with these giant construction vehicles.
Yeah.
Or you just have a family member
that works at a place that sells those.
Oh man, I need the right hookups. I wasn't born into the right family. So I think that would be fun. And some kind of, I'm sure you could make it zany and over the top in some way. Speed demolisher or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But rumbling around in one of those would be a lot of fun.
Nice.
So I want to pitch one other from the fitness standpoint that I still think would be an amazing game. Do a adaptation of the Mechanical Bull to be Shadow of the Colossus themed.
Oh, geez.
That's pretty good. I mean, you just have to go with, what was it, like 7 or something that was relatively small?
Well, and I was thinking even like, would there be a way you could incorporate like one of those, some gyms will have the thing that's sort of like a vertical treadmill, but it's a climbing wall.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah. Or like a pegboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, yeah, so something like that.
Lots of waivers being signed.
That's the question should have read, and you can get people to sign any waiver you want.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it is impossible for you to be sued. Nice. Well, thank you everybody for writing in with your answers. Thank you, Dennis, for putting that up. If you would like to participate in these, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I've got one that it seems like it's going to be pretty fun. Did either of you play the game Chex Quest?
No, I hadn't heard of it until you posted this.
Yeah, so Chex Quest is an infamous, or famous rather, because it's actually pretty good. It is a famous advert game that was released in the 90s, shipped either in boxes of Chex cereal, or like you could redeem, you know, Czech Serial Box Tops to get this game that was basically just a reskin of Doom, but you were a like a piece of Czech Serial, and you were like going around and shooting aliens with like your little ray guns and stuff. It was like a family friendly first person shooter when that wasn't really a thing. This became famous, and like eventually in the age of the internet got, you know, distributed that way as freeware. People made like sequels and stuff with it, like in Z-Doom. And I was excited here this past week when I saw that Limited Run Games is going to be re-releasing an HD remake of Chex Quest. And it is also going to be free to play.
Yes.
Yep. So yeah, it's going to go on PC. You play in 5 levels, and you can do like co-op and stuff. I have no idea how much the actual serial company that makes Chex is involved, but I'm pretty jazzed about it.
If they're not involved, they need to make sure that their involvement is, yes, this is a good thing, please do it for us, versus right. Any other response.
Limited Run has their shit together, so yeah, I can see that being good. I can see them having it worked out. So I'm excited about this. It'll be fun to play through, probably stream it or whatever. But yeah, Chex Quest is cool. Good and fun. Like even the you know, like the Z-Doom version of it is really playable.
Yeah, I like that all the characters are based on the elements of Chex Mix.
Mm-hmm. You have a little pretzel ring and pretzel grid. The whole wheat.
So what are pretzels super effective against?
I was about to say thirst, but what's the opposite of what's the opposite of thirst? I know satiation if it's food, but yeah. Hydration. Pretzels are good against hydration.
That's implausible.
Yeah. These pretzels are making me thirsty. Yeah. So curious about it. It's a fun idea. Fun, lighthearted first person shooter. Dennis,
can't wait for the paid DLC.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. Mission packs. Do it like an old shareware thing. Yeah. Dennis, what's going on with streamers?
Yeah. So, you know, Mixer in particular is the one that comes to mind. There's all these alternate channels, Twitch, YouTube, Mixer, etc. Hitbox, I know, is one. But there's kind of this proliferation going away from Twitch, specifically up and coming streaming channels buying away major Twitch personalities.
Yeah.
The inevitable result of this is there is now a stream aggregation channel called PopDog. Where you can, you know, follow all your streamers from various platforms in one place. So, you know, this is literally the Kayak for streaming. And they could not have picked a name that feels more like it came out of a skit from The Office.
Like, hi, we're PopDog.
Yeah.
we make it easier to find somebody who's screaming. I'm sorry, did we say screaming? We meant streaming. No, we meant both. Okay.
Yep. That wasn't a typo. I mean, I think this, to my mind, is the ultimate serves you right for all of the streaming platforms that went and bought streamers away. Like, yeah, if you want to engineer this kind of scarcity, you deserve to have this kind of thing pop up. That's just going to source it all back down to one platform.
So how do you feel about the Epic Store?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems weird and unnecessary because, like, I don't know, like, I'm not like, I can't imagine a person who's just a fan of streaming. Like, I'm looking at PopDog right now and I see, like, okay, they have like the top games that are being played, like what are being streamed, and they're like ranked. And okay, if you're looking to see somebody, you know, playing some game called Just Chatting, like you can watch that, and you can see like popular streams or whatever, but like that seems like such a rare use case for stream watching in general. Just like, oh, I'm gonna go see what's on, as opposed to like, ah shit, I like Weed Dog, so I'm gonna go, I know Weed Dog's on Mixer, so I just have that bookmarked. Yeah, and I'm gonna go watch Weed Dog, or like
or do you like Weed Dog 69 better?
Weed Dog 69, like ever since they had their little breakup, because Weed Dog 69 did some really shitty stuff, I'm more down with like Weed Dog Prime.
I just feel like the Primo Screamo segments are a little bit higher quality on Weed Dog 69.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, okay, you're going to be there for those, but everything else, just, you know, you're supporting somebody who really dicked over their friend. Yeah. No,
please,
but just
their bro.
As a side note, on the subject of Weed Dog, happy 420, guys.
Oh, yeah, happy 420.
Yeah. No.
420 on 420.
Yep. No, and here I am with nothing. I've got some CBD gummies and that's it.
If you're listening to this now and you're like, oh shit, I forgot, you're not late. You're right on time for being a stoner. So.
Yes, as we record, it is April the 20th. Yeah. No, I didn't mean to filibuster about this. Hopefully somebody gets some use out of that, but I imagine everybody knows where their dudes are streaming at.
Yeah, this is just the I don't know what I expected response to all these streamers being bought away.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. All right. Well, everybody wants their stuff to be in one place, so here's the opportunists coming to put it all in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And round us out, David. What's happening with nuclear weapons?
Wow.
In-game nuclear weapons.
So Fallout 76, as we've discussed, now adds NPCs, and in particular, two new NPC villages, quest hubs, whatever you want to say. However, that raises the question. This is also a game where you can nuke literally anywhere.
Okay.
Actually, technically, you can't nuke the starting vault, but anywhere else you can nuke. So the question raised is, what happens when you nuke one of these settlements? And apparently the answer is the townsfolk simply change into full body hazmat suits and go right about their day like nothing happened.
Cool.
So that is literally the entire story, but somehow they managed to make hazmat suits look kind of cute. as
every hazmat suit looks kind of like Bomberman, so
that's true.
Yeah,
but as they're just like, you know, someone's just like chilling or like, you know, working in their kitchen or whatever.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I mean, is that any different than all of us walking around with face masks on?
Yeah, nope. It's just the Falloutized version.
Yeah, you do what you have to do. It's fine. It's fine.
You know, like, put on your hazmat suit and continue sweeping the floor of the place that was just nuked.
I would be more worried about dust in a Fallout situation. Yeah.
Fair.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah, and the article even mentions what happens to poor Moira in Fallout 3. Oh, aww. Well, yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Let us buttons.
The credit. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of The Level. I appreciate you taking the time. You know the things you can do. You can give to the Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Leave ratings or reviews on Apple Podcast. Tell your friends, come back next week, all that stuff. If you're listening to a podcast, you know, but it feels compulsory to say. Is there anything that I'm forgetting there?
Stay safe and wash your hands, people.
Yes, wash your hands. I found myself getting a little bit lax about that. You know, just because it's like the novelty has kind of worn off, and also because my hands get all chapped or whatever. But just wash your hands. It's still a problem. Doesn't matter what the person in the tri-corner hat tells you, it's still a problem. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross, KOLERoss.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitch at Deck of Wonders.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me in my apartment, social isolating.
And stick around for some titles.
Also, did you say ignore the person with the tricorn hat?
Yes. Yeah.
Or the tricorder hat? Because, I mean, is Jordy telling me that I'm safe from the coronavirus?
I mean, I would put more credence to Jordy. However, no, I said tricorn. I don't know, the new Tea Party movement that's happening right now.
Yeah, that whole thing depressing. Is...
Who has titles?
I just have
one. I have two.
Okay. Ooh.
Go for it.
Dennis, you said first, so.
Yes, I had go full pole vault.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Okay, Dennis, or sorry, David?
I had three style and a quarantine.
Okay.
And ambient peer pressure.
Okay. I have functional ejector seat, and you have to sign a lot of waivers.
You have to sign a lot of waivers is pretty good, but it's also very long.
We haven't done a long one in a while.
Yeah, okay. Then that's where my vote lies.
Okay. How do you feel, David?
I support that.
Okay. Cool. All right, well, I'm going to go. You guys take it easy, okay?
Have a good night.
Yep. Bye.
See ya.